Test, 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 1, 2, 3. Test, can you hear me? Nope.
Huh, you're over the audio, and we can hear you up here.
You still have a live mic on the roof in the room?
Test, 1, 2, 3. Somebody else want to try their mics?
Say something.
No, that one's
test, 4, 5, 6.
Anything but that.
Yeah, we do.
We can hear everybody but Jesse, so we're good.
Yeah. You, as planned.
Wishful thinking.
Okay, I'm going to put it back on privacy for now.
Good afternoon. The Senate Judiciary Committee meeting is called to order. Apologize for the delay. Today is Monday, April 26, 2021. The time is 1:45. We are working through some technical difficulties, but I think we've got them under control. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room, number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Schauer, Senator Keel, Senator Myers, Senator Hughes, and myself, Chair Senator Holland. And we do have a quorum to conduct business today. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Doug, our moderator for the day. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. So number one up today, we have several items on the agenda today. Number one up today will be Senate Bill 122 back in front of the committee. Senate Bill 122 is related to the definition of a victim. The bill was previously heard on April 14th. Senator Reinbold, would you care to come occupy the table? Senator Reinbold, do you have any remarks on SB 122?
First of all, this is Senator Laura Reinbold from District G. And with that, Chair Holland, it is an honor to be before Senate Judiciary today. And thank you to all the members for hearing this bill. It's a very important bill. We made one promise that we would absolutely ensure that the victims would never be left out of our hearts as we move forward to improve the criminal justice system. So with that, we would urge you to get this out of committee, and I want to thank all the committee members for your work, and I want to thank my awesome staff. I don't know if she has any final words to say, but Mr. Chairman, but I want to say she's done the lion's share of the work on this, in addition to the committee, obviously, and just thank you. It's a privilege more than ever. Legislative duties have I realized how important they are to my heart, and it is truly an honor to be here today. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. I will now open public testimony. And so public testimony is now open. Does anyone in the room wish to provide public testimony? Seeing none. And does anyone online? Seeing none. So I'm going to close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed. And are there any amendments to Senate Bill 122? Seeing none, it's a pretty simple bill, very straightforward. And is there any further debate on Senate Bill 122? Hearing none. Senator Reinbold, I will give you one more chance to make any further comments, because I thought maybe your staff might have had some words you wanted to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kelly Toth, for the record, staff to Senator Reinbold. Mr. Chairman, members of the Judiciary Committee, I just want to thank you for hearing this bill, SB 122. Really, the bottom line is this includes children of a person who has been a victim of a crime when a parent or guardian is deceased. And I know that you have a very heavy lift before you in the work that you do, but this bill is important as well and very well could protect children in the future. So thank you for hearing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. Thank you, Ms. Toth. What is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 122, Work Order 32-LS0422/Bravo, be reported from the Senate Judiciary Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objections, it is moved. And we will do a brief at ease for the paperwork. Senate Judiciary Committee is back on the record. All right. Next, we will bring Senate Joint Resolution 6 back to the committee, which is a constitutional amendment regarding the permanent fund put forward by the governor. My intent is to hear public testimony on this resolution and then set it aside until Friday. Members should note their representatives from the administration that were supposed to be available. Not sure if that's, I believe it is, yep. On any of the three governor's bills on today's calendar.
On today.
All right. So, having said that, I will open up public testimony on SGR 6. Public testimony is now open. Does anyone in the room care to provide testimony on SGR 6? Seeing none, let me check. There's a few. Okay, there's one. And I see Kelly Burt Huftling, I believe. Is that how to pronounce it? Huftling? Oh, Kelly and Bert Huftling. Yes, if you can hear me, please state your name and any affiliation you care to admit to, and please begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Bert Huftling. I'm a resident of Big Lake. I represent myself, my child, and my nearly 3,900 followers that follow what I have to say. I am against the governor's bills for SJR 6 and SB 53, not sure which one we're discussing at the moment. Neither of them protect the permanent fund dividend for us Alaskans under the statutory formula that we have always known it. it seems to be that these bills were designed to put the money into the hands of legislators to spend as willy-nilly as they have been doing for the last six years now. This will be year number seven. And I'm completely against them going through. Anything that allows legislators that they may or may not pay us a permanent fund dividend is definitely a no-go for all of the people that I represent. And we are a sound no against these bills until there is a guaranteed statutory formula under the decades-old formula put into these bills. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you for your public testimony. Seeing no other public testimony, SJR 6, I'm going to close public testimony. Let's see. All right. So now we will set SJR 6 aside. There's an amendment deadline of Thursday, April 29th at 2 p.m. for SJR 6. Next, we're going to bring back Senate Bill 53, which is also related to the permanent fund. My intent is to hear public testimony on this bill, then set it also aside until Friday. And I will open up public testimony on Senate Bill 53. Public testimony is now open. Does anyone in the room care to provide testimony for Senate Bill 53? Seeing none. And so I tell you, Mr. Hufteling, I believe you're still on. So if you care to speak to SB 53, I'll catch you first.
Hi, my name is Bert Hufteling. I represent myself. I am from Big Lake, and my child and my 3,900 people that follow my page. We are, as I have just stated, against SB 53. Main reason is it's taking our permanent fund dividend and cutting it in half with our legislators with the language in it that says that they may or may not actually pay us a permanent fund dividend. There's another bill that will be pushing through tomorrow, SB 75, that is a cap that is designed to pay our permanent fund dividend and the state capital budget, which is going to be set to $6 billion if it makes its way through. And the way the language in the SB 53 is written is no different than what they have in the cap that will be going through tomorrow that stipulates that legislators will pay the state and capital budget first, and if and only if they feel like it or if there is any money left, pay us a PFD. I am 100% against any PFD bill that will take away our statutory formula that has been there for decades. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hufteling. I'm not quite sure if I'm saying that right. And next will be Ed Martin. Mr. Martin, if you can hear me, please state your name, put yourself on the record, and begin your testimony. Are you muted, sir? Oh, he just dropped off? I still see him on here. All right. Well, we'll give him a chance but he's gone, correct? All right. So maybe Mr. Martin chose not to provide public testimony. So I'm going to, seeing no one else online or in the room, public testimony is now closed on SB 53. And now I'll set SB 53 aside. At ease. Record, and thanks to Senator Schauer for putting this great idea out there. If you happen to want to provide public testimony, you can submit it via email, and we have two emails, I believe, that are available. One is capital S, capital J, capital U, capital D, or SJUD at akledge.gov, and the other one looks like it's going to be senate.judiciary at akleg.gov. So once again, we'll set Senate Bill 53 aside, and it also will have an amendment deadline for Thursday, April 29th. All right. Finally today, we're going to bring Senate Bill 82 back before the committee. Brief at ease. Senate Judiciary Committee is back on the record. Two things. One, the amendment deadline for Senate Bill 53 will be 2 p.m. on Thursday, April 29th. And having had somebody want to provide public testimony for SB 53, I still don't see them on my list. Appreciate it. Going to reopen public testimony. Public testimony is now open on SB 53. We'll give it a few seconds here. And Ed Martin is back. Ed Martin, Mr. Martin, if you can hear me, please feel free to state your name and put yourself on the record and provide testimony on Senate Bill 53.
Thank you, Chairman Holland. This is Ed Martin from Sterling, Alaska. As you folks probably know, I've testified numerous times. My dad was a pioneer Alaskan and part of the last Save the Dividend campaign. Dad's passed on, but I'm carrying the torch now for five-generation Alaskans. This bill, if it does not go back to the original statute that was passed in 84, I believe, 82 or 84, that does a five-year average of the permanent fund earnings and paying 50% out, it does not meet the criteria for an advisory vote. In fact, I want to inform you folks that back in those days when that came in front of the people of the state of Alaska, there was a couple issues on that advisory vote. One was not to touch the permanent fund dividend. The second was not to create the POMV. Yet our legislature has done this. I have real reservations of whether or not attaching a form of formula other than what we used in the past in the first statute would not be appropriate, because what we're doing is through the POMV, we're utilizing some kind of a formula for which it attaches the value of the corpus. It was never intended. I believe that actually POMV may be unconstitutional, but nobody's took it to the courts. So in my mind, no. If this thing will not allow us a vote to go back to the original statute and then enshrine it into our Constitution, it does not meet what is required of an informative advice that we may give the legislature. If there's any questions, I'd love to be able to talk to you folks more in detail, because my family has been involved in this from the way back when.
Well, thank you, Mr. Martin, for your testimony. I was glad we were able to get you back on the phone today. Next up will be Gene Holt. Gene Holt, if you care to state your name, put yourself on the record, and provide public testimony on SB 53.
Yes, hello, my name is Jean Holt, and I'm from Palmer, Alaska, and I'm just a ordinary citizen that has been following and keeping track of what the heck's going on down there. I'm in opposition of SB 53. I believe totally what Bert is saying, the previous couple callers before, and there is a large group, and we want our permanent fund and do the right thing and do it the right way and allow us to vote and make a constitution if that's necessary. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Ms. Holt. Having exhausted those online and seeing no one else in the room wishing to testify, we're going to close public testimony at SB 53. Public testimony is now closed on SB 53. All right, so finally, we will bring Senate Bill 82 back before the committee. 82 is related to election investigations. This bill was previously heard on April 12th and April 23rd. We do have version B of this bill before us now that incorporates the three amendments that the committee adopted on Friday, April 23rd. Unless there is objection, version B is now our working document. Brief at ease. Senate Judiciary Committee is back on the record, and there was a bit of a discussion, even though we had accepted all the amendments on Friday. We do have a new version of the bill before us, and Senator Schauer, do you have a motion?
I do, Mr. Chairman. I make a motion that the Senate Judiciary Committee adopt as its working document for Senate Bill 82, document number 32-GS1645/Bravo, as the new working document before the committee.
With no objection, it is so moved. It is so adopted. And I will now open this bill to public testimony. Let's see if we have any. A brief at ease. All right, we're back on the record. So now I'm opening public testimony on SB 82. Public testimony is now open. And is there anyone in the room wishing to provide public testimony? Seeing none. We have two people online waiting to provide public testimony. One is Gert Abbott. Gert Abbott, would you please state your name and begin your public testimony?
My name is Garrett Abbott. I reside in Ketchikan, Alaska. I am here representing myself. The ultimate reason for this legislation, SB 82, is that last November, President Trump was unwilling to accept that he lost the 2020 election. In an attempt to overturn the election results, he and his supporters then proceeded to construct a vast conspiracy theory about how the voting machine software had been programmed by the government of Venezuela and various other actors. When repeated hand recounts confirmed the machine counts, the president and supporters shifted the accusations to accusations of ballot stuffing. No courts or audits have found any evidence of these allegations. In support of Trump's attempts to overturn the election, many bills have since been introduced in various state legislatures with the intent of reinforcing doubt and sowing distrust in the election system, bills that pretend to solve a pretend problem in order to say that there had been a problem and thereby give credibility to the accusations that the 2020 election was fraudulent. SB 82 is one such bill. This is not necessary, and it is being pursued in bad faith in order to support an effort to overturn the American democracy. I believe the committee should reject this bill. Thank you.
All right. I believe that was Garrett Abbott. Thank you for your public testimony. And next up will be Bert Hufteling. Mr. Hufteling, would you please state your name and begin your public testimony?
Hi, my name is Bert Hufteling. I represent myself, my child, and my 3,900 Alaskans that follow what I have to say. I am from Big Lake, Alaska, and I am for any bill that will strengthen and tighten our election integrity. Unlike what some people want to believe, our last election in November was full of fraud, and they just don't want to admit it. The only thing that they don't want to admit is that the fraud was there, but just not enough to have overturned the election. It's not that it didn't happen, just wasn't on a large enough scale to have changed the results. Anything that is going to protect our election security and make sure that we have a fair and free election where all legal votes are counted, where we clean up our election rolls that are 130% over our voter population here in Alaska, I am all for everything that has to do with election integrity that makes sure that we have fair and free elections. Thank you for your time and my time to be able to testify today.
Thank you for your public testimony. Now I'll close public testimony on SB 82. Public testimony is now closed. All right, so we do have further amendments for Senate Bill 82. I see amendment number 6 is not going to be offered, correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. It's moved to another committee.
All right. So I have It's noted as conceptual amendment number 7. I do have a copy of it in paper by Senator Keel. Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move conceptual amendment number 7.
I will object for explanation purposes. Senator Keel, please explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment, conceptual amendment, replaces something that I offered and we were working on in the last committee. I've had ongoing discussions with the Department of Law, and obviously I won't speak for them. I think it's fair to say they like the bill the way they wrote it. However, they did offer as one possible piece of language that might accomplish address some of the discussions we had in committee, this language, which would give the Attorney General a 2-year time limit from when a complaint is made to bring any action in court against a candidate or an elected official. That leaves the Department of Law without a time limit on a whole lot of other folks. Complaints against the Division of Elections, they would have no time limit. Complaints against a municipality, complaints against a party, against a group. But for candidates or those who were candidates and are now in office, this would put a time limit on these investigations after which they have to either file or by which they have to either have to file or drop the issue, so that this doesn't become something that tars somebody's name cycle after cycle while the Attorney General's office noodles on it.
All right, at this time I'm going to invite Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General, Department of Law. Ms. Mills, can you speak to this amendment on behalf of the administration? I see our screen is dark. Are you out there?
Yes, thank you, Chair Holland. Again, this is Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General for the Department of Law. Again, appreciate the opportunity to work with the committee on this bill. I do just want to apologize in advance. I literally had my son's doctor's appointment end, so I'm sitting in a parking lot. And if you hear background noise, that's why. But on this amendment, I do appreciate Senator Keel has worked with us and reached out to us. As he stated, I think as a starting matter, we, you know, liked the bill the way we wrote it. I wouldn't say we support this amendment, but what I can tell you is in looking at the different options that the committee seemed interested in, providing this 2-year statute of limitations, I think will force us to prioritize these types of complaints as the committee wanted, but also not lead to kind of second-guessing where we're at in an investigation, and we'll just have to prioritize those appropriately. And when the statute of limitations is over, you know, that means we can't bring an action at that point, and it'll bring some finality, I think, as the committee had wanted. So that's how we see it working, and we do think this is at least workable if this is the way the committee wants to go.
Thank you, Ms. Mills. Senator Schauer.
Thank you. Corey, quick question for you. When you talk statute of limitations, I think, at least the way I often think about it, probably wrong, is that that's when an action would have to be brought. So let's say that you were at the 2-year limit, and one day before that, you know, there was an accusation, whatever, so you decided to start. Does this, and I want to know how it's worded just so it's on the record, does this have to be done and completed inside of 2 years on this one, or would this work like a statute of limitations like other things where you have that long to file something, and then it could go past that as far as that, you know, you're doing your job on investigations, et cetera? How does that work? I just want to make sure I know. Or maybe the sponsor can talk to it, whoever.
Ms. Mills?
So through the chair, Senator Schauer, you had it correct. So we will need to file an action. So filing the action does not mean it has to be all the way through the process. As long as we file the action within that 2-year limitation, if the action takes longer, but at least at that point, we've made it public that we're trying to enforce a violation and our investigation is complete. I hope that makes sense.
It does, thank you.
Is there any other question or comment from the committee? I will maintain my objection and just go to a voice vote on this. Madam Secretary? Oh, I'm sorry.
I would like to make a comment.
Senator Hughes.
So I understand this is putting a little crunch on the Department of Law, but I do think there is validity in the point. And I also believe that because many of the complaints regarding candidates and an incumbent who might be running pertain to financial things that go to APOC, residency things or qualifications that are decided in the 30-day mark, it really is a limited number of things this would apply to. And this goes to making it a priority for the department to get with the program and deal with this. So I actually don't see a problem with it. And I am concerned, and this will go into my other conversation. We are one of the few states that does not have an elected attorney general. And because that, I hate to say it, but politics is politics, and things can happen that are partisan. And you could have an administration who maybe has it out for a particular candidate or an incumbent. And because of that, it could be used. I don't want to say that this administration or any particular administration that we've had in the past would do that, but there is that potential. And so I think that the time limit on this is reasonable. I know the Department of Law would prefer it not be there, but I think to be fair, and the fact that we do not have an elected attorney general that is directly accountable to the people in the same kind of way in states where they are because they're elected, I am going to support this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Is there any other comment from the committee? Seeing none, I will maintain my objection. And Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Hughes. Yes.
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 Yes. With five yeas and zero nays, amendment number 7 is adopted. Next up would be conceptual amendment number 8 by Senator Keel. I believe we have copies of that on paper as well. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move conceptual amendment number 8.
I will object for discussion. Senator Keel, please explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Conceptual amendment number 8 arose after our last committee discussion about what the meaning of intelligence information was. And in initial discussions with the Department of Law, we'd had some back and forth. And the understanding that the Deputy Attorney General expressed in committee in our last discussion caught me a little bit by surprise. And so I went ahead and dug into the Public Records Act and went back and re-listened to the Deputy Attorney General's comments to committee. And ultimately, the conclusion I had to reach was that the phrase intelligence information or rather the exemption for intelligence information of the Attorney General, whatever it is, just ought to come out of the bill. It creates a special secret category that we don't give. I think that the phrase may exist in one other place in statute, but we don't give it to the state troopers. They don't have a total exemption from the Public Records Act for anything. They have a series of things that are not subject to disclosure under the Public Records Act. And the underlying bill says the information from these investigations would have all those same exemptions, all the same protections, right? So by taking out intelligence information, we don't compromise any law enforcement. We don't require anybody to disclose anything that's going to be the hot issue in a court fight. We simply say the Public Records Act says Alaskans get to see what their government's up to, just like everything else in state government. Ultimately, I thought and I looked and I worked and I tried to find some way to define intelligence information, and the simple conclusion I reached is we don't need a special secret category of government stuff here. We have a good Public Records Act that lets the nitty-gritty of an investigation that's gonna lead to law enforcement of some kind, whether civil or criminal, let's that not be disclosed. That works just fine.
Senator Schauer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'd like, of course, to have the administration comment on this. I'm going to look at the statute real quick. I'm not questioning what Senator Kill says. I simply don't know. One of my concerns is, from a previous life, is that there are things at times that intelligence information shouldn't be shared. And I can give an example, and that's not here, but I only point it because I'm trying to connect the dots here to make sure that I'm not doing something I would regret. And we have things called secret, no foreign. And we share all kinds of information with our foreign partners and tier one allies, et cetera, but there are things we still consider not for foreign release because it would expose methods and it could expose agents and other things. So there is a point at which you may want to have some information, for example, and the reason I'm asking is kind of down this vein. Let's say we've got troopers that are working on things that go to drugs or gangs, and they may be undercover. They may have information you don't want to release that could put people in harm's way. So what I'm trying to understand in this, how this may be applied more broadly to where this might actually cause a problem for law enforcement at times, that things shouldn't be released because there are appropriate times to protect information. But I agree, most of the time, everything we do should be open, but there are a few areas. So I would like to, as we're going through this debate here, I'm going to try to pull this up and see, but I just want to put that out there and perhaps have the administration talk to that, because there are times where I know we do this for good reason. If there's not a good reason, we don't do it. So if she could, please.
And we'll go to Ms. Corey Mills, if you're still listening in, Deputy Attorney General, Department of Law, if you could please speak to Amendment Number 8.
Thank you again. Corey Mills, again, for the record, Deputy Attorney General. So on Amendment Number 8, I will just say at the outset that we do appreciate that Senator Keel has been very open to working with us, and we apologize for any confusion that may have occurred in our discussions last week. We understand that we may have had a misunderstanding about what intelligence information meant. But as a policy matter, the administration does not support this amendment. And I think the main reasons why are kind of what Senator Schauer is getting at. By exempting the records from the Public Records Act, that means we can affirmatively tell people that we're trying to get to give us information that this is not information that is public. We won't have to do a review, which can take a lot of hours and time. And, you know, I'd have to look at what a fiscal note would be. Just knowing how many public records requests we get as a state, it is very burdensome. And most of these records, as Senator Keel indicated, I think we'd say should not be disclosed for various reasons, whether it's privacy because we're getting it from an individual or because of law enforcement or investigation. I know in the criminal context, people file public records requests, and then we have to tell them we can't even tell you whether there's an investigation because that actually would disclose information that could hinder an investigation. So ultimately, I don't think making these public records would be very helpful. I don't know that the public would get a whole lot more information, and it would just lead to a lot of effort on our part and a fear that we wouldn't get as candid of information coming from us. Since we're on the civil side and not on the criminal side, you know, the public is used to having law enforcement in their role. The civil investigative arena is kind of a new area for a lot of people, so they fear that it's not confidential. Whereas with law enforcement, you know, I think there's more of an understanding about how that process works. So we were very intentional in what we felt was public and what we felt should be protected, and we're going to do the findings of notice as the committee amended last Friday. We think that's, you know, a good way to try to ensure that there's information out there while not potentially hindering investigations or leading to overly burdensome review processes where we have to go through thousands of pages and determine what needs to be redacted and what does not. So that's kind of our view of this. And I did speak with Deputy Attorney General Skidmore just to understand the law enforcement aspect. And it is important that anything that we would ultimately share in order to further a criminal investigation or to have a more open relationship with our criminal counterparts, it is important that information is kept confidential. And so we just want to maintain the highest amount of that to ensure the best investigation and the best enforcement methods that we can.
Thank you, Ms. Mills. I see Senator Shower's got the Alaska statutes keyed up.
So I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I have two things here. One is still a question, and Corey or whoever may have to speak to this because we're, again, almost like a new category. Intelligence information. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. Do I have permission to read a couple things? And I think it's germane for the committee.
Please do.
So, you know, in the bill it says intelligence information of the Attorney General is not a public record and is not subject to disclosure. In one sense, I understand that. For some of the exceptions, the other side, though, is, again, what does that entail? Because what I don't want to do is put the, you know, give the executive branch, you know, the ability to say we're just not going to tell people things. And so what is encompassed in that intelligence is important. But I'll read this for the committee, because if you have the questions I do, this is why. So in Section 40.25.120, which is being discussed here under public records, exceptions, certified copies, the exceptions, the germane one here is down to six. So records, these are exempted or accepted. Records are information compiled for law enforcement purposes, but only to the extent that the production of the law enforcement records or information, A, could reasonably be expected to interfere with enforcement proceedings, would deprive a person of a right to a fair trial or an impartial adjudication, C, could reasonably be expected to constitute an unwarranted invasion of the personal privacy of a subject, defendant, victim, or witness, D, could reasonably be expected to disclose the identity of a confidential source, one of the concerns ahead, E, would disclose confidential techniques and procedures for law enforcement investigations or prosecutions, another consideration. F, would disclose guidelines for law enforcement investigations or prosecutions if the disclosure could reasonably be expected to risk circumvention of the law, or G, could reasonably be expected to endanger the life or physical safety of an individual. I know I talked fast, but I thought that's important to hear for us as we debate this, is there are a pretty good list of exceptions. So I go back to my first question with this still, Mr. Chair, possibly for the administration, is what does, and we may not be able to define this, hence I think that's where I'm a little bit, I'm waffling here, but what does intelligence mean? Because like I said, what I don't believe we want to do is create an entire category where they go, nope, we don't have to tell you anything. That often becomes an issue, and that's not transparent. So there's a couple things going on here. I hope that makes sense for the debate. So possibly to Corey, back to that question.
Ms. Mills, having heard that, do you have any further comment?
So through the chair, Senator Shower, the way I described it on Friday, again, Corey Mills for the record, we view intelligence information as that information basically gathered, you know, actively in an investigation. So whether it's, you know, gathering witness testimony or documents gathered from if they're not otherwise public, you know, all of that information that's gathered in the investigation is all stuff that could end up being used either for law enforcement purposes or for enforcement purposes. And so that's the category of information. I would say, I don't know if John Haley is on the line, but he is our consumer protection attorney and may have something to add there if the chair wouldn't mind checking with him.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask, and I promise that I think this is my last question before Mr. Haley comes on, as this really has thrown me for a loop here with this, because I understand the need to protect certain things, but I also understand the need to be transparent.
Last question. We do have other committee members.
Understood. And I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I just want to get this one right. This is, I will not talk again. I'll be quiet. In this case here, Corey, the way I read this, you know, really a lot of this has to do with criminal proceedings where you're talking real, you know, like I said, drug enforcement, other things where people's lives are at risk, et cetera. Can you just answer whether or not we're not really in that realm here, correct? This is more civil. So we're talking about, you know, some, you know, violations of election laws or those kinds of things. So we're not diving it down to we're probably going to have, you know, undercover agents with, you know, gangs selling drugs. That's not really what we're discussing here, correct?
So through the chair, Senator Shower, I think you are correct. I do want to be clear that it's amazing when you do civil investigations how much criminal, you know, you may find criminal conduct, and those are referred appropriately. But you're correct. We're not talking about conducting a criminal investigation. The civil investigation does not give you search and seizure, you know, those sort of things that occur in the criminal context.
Thank you, Ms. Mills, and I'll go to John Haley, Department of Law. Mr. Haley, are you listening in? Do you have anything to add?
For the record, this is John Haley, Assistant Attorney General at the Alaska Department of Law. I guess I'd just say that generally the department views intelligence information quite broadly. You know, intelligence information is sort of, I guess, what it sounds like. It's, you know, information about potential or prospective violations of law, including tips that come in, you know, as well as documents or, you know, anything else gathered in the investigation, photographs, you know, stakeout videos, all that kind of stuff. That could occur within the context of a criminal investigation, but also within the context of a civil investigation. And I would add to what Ms. Mills stated, yes, that is true. I mean, civil investigations can often uncover sort of criminal activity. And sometimes I think a violation of law could be both civil and criminal. You could think about things like tax fraud or securities fraud as an example. The SEC, for instance, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and, you know, handles both civil and criminal investigations, often involving sort of the same conduct. And I think one of the purposes of this bill was to create an ability to get into court a little bit earlier through a civil process with the hopes that certain violations could potentially be uncovered and fixed before they would affect the outcome of an election. So I think that some of this investigation could involve sort of what we would call parallel investigations, where the civil side's doing something, even though it's possible the criminal side might be investigating the same thing. And I think there could be some concerns on the criminal side's end that if it was possible that our investigations could our civil investigations could be made public in any way, that might make them nervous. They may in some circumstances prefer that we not be investigating, or they may prefer not to give us information. So those are, I guess, some thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Haley. Senator Hughes, did you still have a comment?
Well, I have a question, because I'm looking on page 3 of the work draft we adopted at the bottom, section 8. And what we're talking about is after the findings, after the investigation has concluded. So what I'm hearing you say is concerns about tip-offs during the investigation. Could we solve this problem by adding to the line about intelligence information that could not be released until either a civil or criminal and or similar criminal investigation is completed or something like that, because I understand you don't want the information out there because it might mess things up. But if the investigation is over, do you still have a problem? Is it the volume you're concerned about, or is it messing up an investigation? Because what you've been saying, both Corey and John, have related to the investigation still being underway. But as I'm reading this section, it appears the investigation has ended.
Ms. Mills, do you have any comment?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, so I think there are two things. One is, just because the civil investigation is done doesn't mean there's not a criminal. And the minute you tip off that there was a civil, or someone sees, oh, we were talking to this person or we took photos of this, you could end up affecting the criminal. So I think you would have to take into account any criminal investigation. And then what you'd have to look at is what are the statute of limitations on that criminal conduct. So that's one thing. But the other item that I believe I mentioned earlier is just the volume. So when we're having to review documents and determine which things are redacted, so even if the investigation is done and we're all the way through the process, if it's just a blanket, you know, everything falls under the Public Records Act, then you go to the exceptions, as Senator Schauer was saying, and those exceptions are there for a reason. But we have to review every single sentence in every single document and determine, is this something that we should redact? Is this something that we shouldn't? And we don't get any of those costs back. The Public Records Act doesn't apply to our review as Department of Law. So we end up spending hours and hours and hours. I think people can think back to some of the other documents we've had to review. You know, it really adds up. So that's our only concern, is how much is the public actually going to get? Probably not a lot, because some of the exceptions will likely apply to the information, especially if there's a concurrent criminal investigation. And then, and how much are they getting for how much time and resources we are going to have to spend to review it? So that's why I said it's really twofold. It's one, I don't want to raise anything that'll hinder the investigation. If that's the case, we'll likely assert some sort of protection or privilege. And the minute we start redacting but don't redact everything, is that going to tip someone off that, oh, there must have been an investigation, otherwise they wouldn't be redacting it? So it's a kind of chicken and the egg. I do understand the concern of wanting to make sure that there's some sort of, you know, transparency and there's accountability for what's going on. And I think we can do that in an aggregate way, and you know, make sure we're accountable to the legislature in terms of in an aggregate manner. But I just want to make sure we're not losing the purpose and the tools by making people afraid that everything's going to be public that occurs when we're doing these investigations. So those are just my thoughts.
Thank you, Ms. Mills. Mr. Haley, do you have any other comment to add?
To the chair, no, thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Haley. Follow-up from Senator Hughes.
So we've got quite the conundrum here, and I'm just wondering, Deputy AG Mills, whether if we provided, part of the problem is the term intelligence information is kind of broad. Maybe if we had a definition of that, that might help. I also think adding something about that it couldn't. Intelligence information is almost too broad. You need to specify what out of intelligence information should not be released. And then if we make it clear that they can't get any of it until any criminal or civil investigation is over. I mean, wouldn't that solve the problem where we're providing as much as we can? Or do we need to be putting another exemption in the Public Records Act relating instead of throwing this in here?
Ms. Mills?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I mean, I think these are pretty big policy questions. You can always address it through the Public Records Act. That wouldn't resolve the resources issue. Like I said, I think we would have to increase our fiscal note just because of how much those reviews cost. But I'm just trying to think in terms of a general way. I mean, if we're going to do it, again, we'd, of course, want to prefer to keep things the way they are. Defining intelligence information, I mean, we already have that term in other statutes, so I wouldn't want to upset those statutes to solve this problem. But if we wanted to go through and try to, you know, I think we'd be happy to work with committee members. We still have two committees ahead of us before it even gets to the floor. We'd be happy to work with people if this continues to be a concern on how to carve that out. I'm just, we've just never had to parse it out before. And so having to parse out in some sort of way that we try to maybe describe categories of investigative tools or documents that we would get and where those fall, I think is a much more complex policy conundrum, I guess, if you want to say that. That would take us definitely some time to really think through and work through what would work and to hopefully not encounter the issues that we think this would cause by just opening everything up.
Thank you, Ms. Mills. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate all the time and effort the committee has put into this. I think that Senator Hughes' questions really went to the reason I came back with this conceptual amendment. We do have the term intelligence information. I know in one other place in our statute it doesn't have a definition. That was the first place I looked. So that's a challenge. And I appreciate the extensive list of exceptions to what gets disclosed that's in the law that Senator Schauer read. Also, in the different subsections of that same piece, anything that has to be confidential by federal law or regulation. So if Homeland Security shared something with Division of Elections or the AG, right, they wouldn't have to share that. Trade secrets, if we got into somebody's software, wouldn't have to share that. Ultimately, I think Senator Hughes' line of inquiry really hit on the critical two pieces of this. One is this amendment doesn't open everything up. It doesn't even subject anything to the Public Records Act until after the civil investigation is over. And when you go through all those exceptions that Senator Schauer read for us, an active criminal investigation doesn't really have to disclose anything either. Right, so this is really a review after action, when we have done whatever enforcing and joining we're going to do. Only then do we do these reviews under this amendment. And I think it's great to bend our brains to whether this is, as the deputy AG said, a challenge in the civil side working with the criminal side. It's hard for me to see that it would be, because, again, these are the rules that the criminal side of law works under. Same ones. So I don't know what aggregate accountability would be. I'm not sure what that means. But I think ultimately what we're left with is that sometimes it's a pain in the neck for the government to go through stuff. And I think it should be a pain in the neck for the government to keep stuff secret from the citizens after we're done with our government work. So I appreciate that there may be a little price tag with that. It would be some time off, since we're talking about after all the investigations are done. But that doesn't make me sweat. I think we've got a pretty good public records law, and this just says let's follow it after we're done with all our everything else.
And if I understand, we're still talking about what civil investigations, not necessarily what criminal investigations. That's where my concern falls. But
yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real brief. Corey, your question before, your comment about Noodle and all this, please do, because this is going to State Affairs next, so we're going to take it up there. So please try to have an answer for us. And I was just going to say that, Mr. Chairman, that's something we will look very hard at on the next time with the definition of it. So it's going to another place. We're going to see it. So just for the record, I will take that under advisement. So because I have some questions on how this plays out and not quite answered today. So thank you.
I was enjoying the discussion. We still have 20 minutes to go, so I was ready to roll. Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Senator Keel's interest in this, and I, now that I know that it's going to State Affairs and Senator Schauer made those remarks, and then Deputy AG Corey's comments that she'd be happy to continue to work to try to work on this issue. I don't want to see a big fiscal note on this right now. I think this is important. And with a little bit of leeway as far as responding to this amendment, could I make a more general statement about the overall bill right now?
Please do.
So I know there was I really appreciated the gentleman, I believe he was from Ketchikan, expressing his vantage point on this bill. And part of the work, we were looking at something from another angle for this bill, and so we were in touch with NCSL, and there was an act, now I can't remember, I'd have to look it up in a text, but it was in the early 2000s requiring states to have a system set up for complaints. And so to me, I don't relate this to anything happening in the last year. I think we're a number of years behind because we didn't really have a good system. So in that we want to get it right, that we're finally working on a good system, I think this item can move on to the other committees and be worked on. So I'm hesitant at this point to put a big fiscal note on it when there's potential to work through it so there's not a big fiscal note. So as much as I appreciate Senator Keel, and I do have remaining questions, I'm going to be a no. So sorry about that, Senator Keel.
Is there any other comment or questions or debate from the committee? I will maintain my objection And with no other comment, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Senator Myers. No. No. Sorry.
Senator Steele?
Yes.
Senator
Schell? No.
No.
No. With a vote of 1 yeas and 4 nays, Amendment Number 8 is not adopted. But do note that this bill does have, I'm sorry, do note that this bill does have further referrals to State Affairs and Finance. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a procedural item, I think I have two amendments from our last meeting that were held in abeyance or with withdrawn with the idea that they might come back up. Those, I think they were 1 and 3, but they were legal A.1 and A.7. I'd like to withdraw those at this time.
Okay. A.1 and .7 are withdrawn. All right. So this bill does have further referrals to State Affairs and Finance. Are there any further amendments? Seeing none, is there any further debate? Senator Hughes.
Yeah, I just want to get on the record. Not only have we had a duty to have a system in place for to deal with complaints and investigations, one of the things we were actually looking at with NCSL to see, as I mentioned earlier, you know, there are partisan politics, and sometimes it's hard to get away from. And because you could have an administration where the AG could, again, I'm not pointing the fingers at anybody, but there's potential for an AG to try to cover for the division of elections. And the reason why that is more apt to happen in our state than most other states is because we don't have an elected attorney general who's directly responsible to the people in the same kind of way. And because of that, we were looking at some kind of model to see if we could have some sort of citizen oversight as to whether an investigation would need to occur. Because, of course, if a complaint's filed to the division and they say, nope, nothing's going wrong here, moves up to the AG, and let's see, the AG's being partisan and trying to cover for the division, they say, nope, nothing's happened here. The person's next option is an expensive lawsuit. And so we were looking at whether we needed some kind of a citizen oversight group that would be able to look at this. And we weren't able to get our ducks in a row for that. And because we are a unique state in that we don't elect our attorney AG, you know, there wasn't any model out there. So it's something I still think it is a need. And although I appreciate the bill providing a couple layers and helpful, there is that one situation that is we haven't really been able to figure out a way to address it in short order. It might be something down the road. It also would probably trigger a fiscal note. And as I said in the earlier amendment, I don't want a fiscal note that's going to cause a problem for this bill moving through. But I do think citizen oversight is a necessary component at some point. Until, you know, unless at some point we decide to go to an elected AG model. So, other than that, the other features of the bill I think are important steps to have a system for complaints and investigations. It's just that one area, Mr. Chair, that is concerned that is still lacking. And the reason why it probably would trigger a fiscal note is because it'd probably have to be a new entity. There's not really an existing border commission that could take on that duty. So, but it's something we'll be thinking about maybe down the road. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to bring up somewhat in response to the gentleman from Ketchikan that was under the public testimony, and I believe Senator Hughes addressed this a little bit as well about this bill isn't, I don't believe this bill is in response simply to the 2020 election, particularly the presidential side. I believe that there were issues that needed to be addressed before this year. The one that comes to my mind immediately is the 2018 election and former Representative Ledoux and the actions that she is currently facing in court right now. A lot of the stuff didn't come out until, I believe it hit the news, what, early 2020,
from actions in the 2018 election. And the tools that this bill gives the administration, a lot of those allegations could have come out, could have gone to court in 2019, long before the 2020 election, and I believe would have served the public better. And of course, we know that that her trial has gotten delayed multiple times, and some of that's having to do with the nature of the case. Some of that's having to do with the courts shutting down because of COVID and everything. But I believe that there's more going on here than just the 2020 election, and I believe that this bill does help us give us some flexibility there to address things.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Myers. Senator Schauer.
Very briefly to that point, because we keep saying them, but I do think it's germane with out there. This goes back further than that. If you talk to the Ledoux one, this goes back, as my understanding of reading about it in law enforcement 2016, 2014, 2012, it goes back a ways. But the point is germane is that it was in the hands of the federal government, and then it eventually went to the state. So you have the potential for the state to maybe do something with things and look at it at a lower level, and we might be able to get movement on things that otherwise might take the federal and state government years to look at something that probably should have been done years ago. So as long as the bar is met appropriately, I think it's germane. But I do agree that I don't think this had anything to do, talking to the administration specifically on this bill, as I'm doing other election work, had anything to do with the past election cycle. I can validate that based on conversations, for what it's worth. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, what is the will of the committee?
All right, Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 82, Work Order 32-GS16454/Bravo, as amended, be reported from the Senate Judiciary Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Without objection, SB 82, Version B, as amended, has advanced from the Senate Judiciary Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, our next meeting is Wednesday, April 28th at 1:30 p.m., and we do have to sign some paperwork before we leave the committee room. We are adjourned at 2:52.